I'm never sure how much to chat on to you. So I'll just introduce you to this week's guest, the wonderful Lucy Lucroft. She's a journalist, blogger and podcaster and one of my favourite internet humans. I feel like I've known her forever, but we probably only connected this time last year as we were both pregnant at the same time. And on Instagram, that's pretty much all you need to spark up a friendship. She really knows her stuff and is always super honest, so I think you're going to love what she has to say. Enjoy.
Hi, Lucy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Very well.
Good. So for all the lovely listeners who don't already know and follow you, would you like to give them a bit of a little pitch about who you are?
I am Lucy Lucroft. I am a freelance journalist. I'm a blogger and a podcaster. So I have a blog, a vegan travel and lifestyle blog, for women who are thinking about having children or had children or women in their 30s. It's for women, basically. And I have a podcast about interesting women online called What She Said.
Amazing. You do all the things. So how did you get started? What did that look like for you?
So how did I get started? So I can't even remember what it was. 2012, I think I started my blog. 2013, sorry. So 2012, my then boyfriend, now husband, and I were at a bit of a crossroads in our life. We met at work and then got together, and I never really felt super satisfied in my office job. And he had got to a stage where there were a lot of redundancies, and he had the opportunity to take voluntary redundancy. And we kind of just, I'd been traveling before solo about 3 years prior to that. And when that had happened, I had planned to move to Australia, live there. I planned to give it all up, you know. I was already not happy with my life then.
Yeah.
But I had to come back because my dad was poorly. And so I got typical kind of situation. I came back and I had to go back to work. Once you're at work, you're a slave to the wage, aren't you? You just get
very
stuck.
Much so, yeah.
So time rolled on and I met Ollie. And then when we had this opportunity, we were like, yeah, let's just quit our jobs, go travel. So that's what we did. And we planned just 6 months. So started a blog to not even to support that. It was more just to tell our friends and family where we were and just as a way to journal our travels. And then pretty quickly things took off a little bit for me and I fell in love with it. And we also, you know, decided to stay traveling for like 2.5-3 years. So yeah, that's kind of how it all started. And I've just been winging it ever since.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm learning that more and more. We're all winging it, aren't we?
Very much so. I think so. So when you say it sort of took off, what did that sort of look like? Did you just get really into it, or were you getting some opportunities and making money and things?
Yeah, kind of all of the above. I just fell in love with it. I've always loved writing. I've always loved writing, and I wanted to be a journalist from the age of about 9, 10, and I pitched my parents this journalism course when I was about 12 or 13. And I had the brochure from wherever it was I wanted to get. I think it was London College of Fashion, actually, which I did end up going to, but not to do journalism, funnily enough. Yeah, so I pitched them and was like, I want to leave school at 16. I want to move to London. I want to be a journalist. And they were like, no. Is the short answer.
Right. I can see why to a certain extent.
Yeah, I can't imagine if a nurse came to me and said, actually, we live in London, so it wouldn't be that weird. But if she was like, I want to move abroad and
I'm quitting school and I'm going to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So in terms of, what did taking off look like for me? I guess it was just that I enjoyed it so much. And yeah, people were noticing me and I was getting collaboration kind of requests. And I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors because my stats were absolutely shocking for a year and a half.
Don't tell them that.
yeah, exactly.
But that was back when sort of, I think no one really knew what they were doing on either side of things. You know, that was long enough ago that I think probably businesses were only just starting to work with bloggers.
So
for them, any stats were good stats to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And no one was getting, other than probably Zoella, no one was getting huge numbers, I don't think, at that time, really. Maybe I'm just imagining the past as this weird hazy thing. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But it feels like that's only really happened in the last couple of years.
I think in the industry that I was in, which was travel, and I was really a pure travel blog back in those days, the real big hitters, I mean, Monica Stott, who's been on my podcast a couple of times, the Travel Hack.
Yeah,
was,
I really love her blog, yeah.
Yeah. She was doing amazing back then, I think. And there were definitely a few people, but it was really the US bloggers that were doing amazingly.
Yeah.
The Nomadic Mats and the Adventurous Kates and Alex in Wonderland, those type of people, they were just doing amazingly. So yeah, I think you're right to a certain extent that in the UK we were behind. And there's certainly, I mean, there wasn't such a thing as an influencer when I started out. That just wasn't a thing.
No. Yeah, that definitely I feel like I started hearing that word maybe like the beginning of last year, more and more. And that kind of now is kind of an actual, you know, like a job title, isn't it? I'm an influencer. Although I feel like if I was one, I would never want to say it because I just feel like it's a weird word to be like, oh yes, I influence people for a living. I mean, that is what they do. That's 100% what they do. So it is an accurate term, but I would feel weird about describing myself that way if I was to be an influencer of any kind.
That's interesting, because how would you describe yourself now? I know blogging isn't your full-time gig, but say it was, would you feel icky about saying you're a blogger? Because I certainly feel icky. That's something that I struggle with.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably because it isn't my full-time job, I sort of say I work in digital marketing and I'm a blogger. So I feel like because it's like the and I am, it's like, yeah. I feel like if maybe it was my full-time job, I'd feel a bit weirder about it, because I think people be like, you do what for a like what even is that as a although I'm surprised that people still think that, especially when there are people like Zoella and other like so many huge blogs, that people are still like, oh sorry, you do what, like how do you make money from that? Like it's not the like wild west of the internet anymore, like everyone knows what's going on.
But people are traditional, aren't they?
That's true yeah. Especially like, I mean, I don't think my grandparents or my parents will ever understand what I do. Not just the blog side, the like digital marketing side. Like, also, I do Facebook. That's what I tell them. I do Facebook. Like, yeah, okay, I understand that. So you were traveling in Thailand and blogging up a storm. And eventually, obviously you live in London now. When did you come back? Was that a strategic move? Just a natural progression? What did that look like?
So we were traveling through Southeast Asia and a little bit of Europe, and then we settled in Thailand for 6 to 8 months, I think it was, and we were living on an island there, and we got engaged. And we got engaged there, actually. That was January 2015, I think. And then it came to kind of October of that year, and Ollie was coming back to England for his stag do, which was actually in Germany. He went to Oktoberfest for his stag do.
Nice,
so
yeah.
We kind of tag teamed it, both came back to England just for a little break and to do some wedding stuff, because planning a wedding from an island in Thailand is...
Oh, so you're getting married in the UK?
Yeah.
You didn't consider getting married in Thailand and making everyone come to Thailand?
Well, I really wanted to basically elope. But Ollie is quite traditional, and he isn't traditional, is kind of the wrong word, but he was very much like, no, I want to go back, get married, I want all of our friends there, it'll be fun.
I
didn't want that. Yeah. So we compromised. Yeah, so planning a wedding from Thailand was just insane. And then more and more, we were both realizing that we weren't very happy there. And when we came back in October, I think it was October. Yeah, it was October. Yeah, of course, because it was for Oktoberfest. We decided that's it, we're coming back. So we came back for the wedding, and it was really not strategic. We didn't know what we were going to do. We knew we would go back to London, and that was it. We didn't. I knew that I would carry on doing what I was doing abroad back at home, because by that point I was making my money from copywriting, journalism, as well as a bit of, you know, blogging as well. But Ollie had been teaching people how to scuba dive. So, and prior to that was working as a toy buyer. So he was like, I don't know what, it was harder for him really, because he didn't know what he was going to do. So it wasn't strategic at all. We just went with our gut, and we're like, can't be bothered to go back. Sick of Kotao. That's it. Back to London we go.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I can imagine. I can totally understand that because I'm very much like a home bird, and the idea of long-term travel stresses me out in a big way. But I imagine there's a lot of people listening being like, "Why would you come and live in London when you could be living in Thailand?" Like, would you go back to long-term travel? Is that something that?
Yeah.
Are you done with that now? Is that over?
I think we will. But it's interesting how you say that, because the "are you done with that" or "is this chapter of your life done" is a question that I ask other people, and other people were really asking us when we came back. And to be honest, the past year for me has been like the worst for travel. I haven't traveled hardly at all.
Yeah.
But it's something that we've got some trips planned this year, and it's definitely something that I think we want to do when she gets older.
Yeah.
And maybe move abroad, or we definitely want to take her traveling. So I think long-term travel, we're definitely not done with it, but no. We're playing it by ear.
Yeah, I mean, you've got however many, well, hopefully a good long time left. So it's not like you have to decide now, being like, right, well, in this year I'm going to do it, and you know, you might feel differently in 5 years, and then another 5 years after that, mightn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
So what appealed to you about blogging? What was, you say, you know, you really fell in love with it. What's your like fave bit?
I mean, writing is my number one love. So I love being able to just write about whatever I wanted to write about with nobody reading. And really there was like nobody reading. Maybe, I don't know, it felt like it was just my family reading for the first year.
Yeah, I think everyone has that when they start a blog.
Yeah. Oh no, my stats were really terrible though. Honestly, they were awful. Like maybe 100 views a month for a good maybe 10 months, I would say. Like they were that terrible, but I'd already worked with brands and stuff. And I want to like say this
because of course.
I think people really worry that, oh, you can never do anything if you've got terrible stats. And I wasn't lying about my stats to get these collaborations, but you know, things can happen.
There's also other parts of collaborations that aren't just about the audience. It's you writing content, taking photos that they can then, you know, the brands can then use on their own channels and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not all about necessarily, I know audience is a part of it, and I think more and more it becomes a bigger part of it as so many people have such a big audience.
Mm.
But it's not the only thing that they worry about.
Totally. Yeah, I completely agree with you. But yeah, writing was the number one thing that I loved. And then I think I really loved the community that I found online. I loved reading other blogs and connecting with bloggers on Twitter. And I was an early adopter of Instagram. So I had Instagram in 2011. And so before even I went traveling and started a blog. And I've always loved it. So even though I never necessarily loved photography or was any good at it, I really loved that platform.
Yeah, I think it is like more and more I find it to be the nicest platform, like the most friendly.
Yeah,
like I know I think some people find it's like a bit stressful because you feel like you can see all these beautiful photos and everyone has this beautiful life. But on the flip side of that, there's also just lots of nice, lovely people there.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you.
So you sort of changed the tact of your blog a little bit when you were pregnant and obviously when you had Nias, and you say you haven't travelled much in the last year. So obviously since she's coming up to one, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, next month.
Oh my gosh, so exciting. So like, was that, again, like maybe not strategic, probably not the right word, but that was a conscious change, or just you were just writing about what you were experiencing at the time?
Yeah, I think when I was pregnant, I mean, I loved pregnancy so much. I loved it. So I think I just naturally wanted to write about it. and then I realized, oh, like people want to read about this.
People love reading about babies.
Yeah, totally. And I didn't really think about it because I had never read a mummy blog in my life. Not that I looked down on them. But if
you don't have kids, there's not always that much content that would be relevant for you to read.
That's true. But I don't read them now.
No.
At all. Like I read people's blogs, like your blog, which is lifestyle, and then you've become a mother.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. But
no dedicated mummy blogs.
No. I'm not and I'm the same with like baby books and all that crap. I don't read any of them apart from Clemmy Hooper's.
Yes, I read hers as well.
Amazing.
Such I don't think book. I even finished it. Again, I think it just like you because you love being pregnant. I really hated being pregnant.
Yeah, I remember,
I did absolutely nothing. Yeah. I think that whole time that was, you know, I didn't read anything. I barely blogged. I did nothing. So I did start it and enjoy it, but I don't think I ever got to the end. And I also didn't want to scare myself about labour because I'm really, really squeamish. So I was like, I know what's going to happen, I don't know what I'll do. So I think I left that chapter to be like, okay, I'll just pretend that's not happening.
I'm just going to pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
So it wasn't strategic at all. I think it did become strategic.
Yeah.
So I've now definitely probably. When I went back to work, I really started thinking more strategically about my blog and what I wanted to be and what I wanted to look like and how I want to provide value to people. And I really, for the first time ever, really critically looked at the things that people are reading, not just because I've always looked at Google Analytics, but I've never really looked qualitatively. And I did a reader survey and really kind of dived into what people were saying and looked at comments and looked at heat maps and where people were going. And that's when I realized, actually, I don't want to write about motherhood in the way that I thought I was going to write about motherhood, because I don't want to be a family travel blogger.
So I guess
things became a lot more strategic.
Yeah. Because you sort of said you don't really love family travel, despite having been a travel blogger and travel being such a big part of your life. And I completely understand why, because we're trying to book our first ever holiday with Ben. We're not big travelers at all. I've barely been to any places. You would probably be shocked. It just seems so stressful to be like, okay, well, we either need an apartment so that he can, when he goes to bed at 7, we don't have to sit in the dark in a hotel room.
Yeah.
Or do we try and take him out with us and hope he sleeps in his pram? Or, you know, what's those cobbled streets do we need to get? He's so massive for his age. Like, so I'm like,
is he? He doesn't look massive.
He is. He's already, so he's 7 months and he's already in his 9 to 12 month clothes.
Oh, I think you're long.
He's very long. Yeah, tall. Yeah. Paul is very tall, so he's definitely taking over to him in that sense. But it means he's really heavy. So like stuff like being like, oh, you could just stick him in the carrier and do whatever. I can't carry him. He's too heavy for me.
Yeah.
So like stuff like that is just, there's so many like logistical things that makes it quite stressful when it should be a holiday.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly it, isn't it? And I think it is very much about, I've realised that I just can't travel the way that I used to travel, which is fine. But actually, there are some parts of travel that I want to retain for just me or just me and Ollie. So we kind of, the way we've planned our year and the travel that we're going to do, I've got 2-3 trips planned just by myself, and then we've got a trip planned just for me and Ollie, and then we're planning a big family holiday later in the year where it's not going to be 2-3 days, we're going to do 2 weeks. And to be honest, it is long haul, so
yeah.
I don't know what I'm thinking, but
once you're there though, it'll be fine, you know.
And we've chosen a place, we're going to go to either Thailand or Sri Lanka, so we're going to go to, I mean, Thailand we've lived in,
so it's easy for us.
And Sri Lanka we spent 5 weeks in, so we kind of been strategic about it. Like, yes, it's long haul, but we're going somewhere familiar, and it's going to be 2 weeks. So yeah, once you're there, like, you can totally settle into it, can't you? You don't have to worry so much.
And they're both quite relaxed sort of places as well. Like, if you do just want to like nap all day or whatever it is, it's not like, because we were really hoping to go to New York. And the more I think about it, the more I think, oh gosh, well, we'll probably only go for a few days because it's just so expensive that you can't, 2 weeks in New York would be like probably our whole mortgage payments for the whole.
Yeah.
I know people say you can do it on the cheap, but then we have a baby. So then you have to make sure you've got enough space for the baby. And then you're like, okay, that just seems too much. Whereas you think, oh, actually, it may be like a 2 week holiday where, you know, we're just sitting in the sun for a bit and it's very, like, a much more like chilled atmosphere generally, would probably be, would be less stressful.
I think so, definitely. And I've learned a lot of that from Monica as well.
Yes.
Because she basically said, yeah, city breaks are a no-no. I don't do them. Like, it's got to be a beach holiday, and she'll go to really cool places. She'll just go to places like Tenerife, but then do some really cool stuff while she's there. And I don't mean to, like, talk crap about Tenerife, but I think because challenging up people's perceptions of
it's places. It's not just an all-inclusive hotel where you go and watch the Peppa Pig show or whatever. There are other, you know, and also because they are countries, you know, they have their own, you know, culture and stuff going on. They're not just holiday destinations in that sense, are they? So you can seek out a bit of something else if that's what you're interested in.
Yeah, totally.
I think especially because her two are a little bit older as well, and they can like walk and they want to run around and stuff. Like, I imagine if you've got a very small baby, it's quite easy to move them from place to place. Once they have a mind of their own and they don't want to sit still, you're suddenly in a bit of a pickle, aren't you? So has that sort of impacted what your sort of journalism stuff as well? Because obviously, if you're not traveling as much, have you stopped writing about travel as much on that side of things as well as on the blog?
Yeah, massively. So I'm only just picking up more. So I went back to work officially in January.
Yeah.
But I've only started getting travel commissions now because 2 months later, because I just wasn't pitching for them. Because when a press trip would come through, or if I came up with an amazing story, I suddenly thought, well, yeah, it's all well and good, but I'm not going to be able to go on this holiday. It's because I obviously can't take an IAS with me. No. I then have to, and Ollie works 6 days a week.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So he works every other Saturday. So he does one of those, and he doesn't get a day back in lieu. So yeah, so it means that we're really limited in terms of, I can't even just go away for a weekend.
No.
So yeah, it has massively impacted my journalism as well.
Is that something that you sort of, not regret's the wrong word, because obviously you don't regret, you know, becoming a mum, but is it something you feel a bit like, oh, I wish I could still do that, or
yeah,
kind of ready for, yeah. No, I completely understand. No, I'm completely with you.
I think it's definitely been, and yeah, like you say, I don't regret it, but it's something that I didn't consider beforehand, because I was that absolute idiot when I was pregnant. Like, I'm planning to do this, and I'm going to take it everywhere. I'm going to be such an earth mama. I'm just going to put her in a wrap. Well, I've got news for you folks. This might be you, like, totally. I don't want to be that person that's like, it'll be terrible, but I hate wraps. Just putting it out there. I've tried them all.
Yeah.
They're fine when they're a newborn.
Yes, when they're small.
Don't be bothered. A baby wearing is not me.
No, I'm the same. And I thought the same as well. I was like, oh, you see all these people on Instagram, like, carrying their babies around. You're like, oh, I'm going to be like that. It's going to be so special, like, cuddling them all the time. And when he was small, it was one of the only things that if I wanted to do anything, I put him in it so that I could do, you know, cook dinner or whatever it was.
Exactly.
But again, he's massive and heavy and my back can't take it.
I'm the same with Anais, because she is, we went to the health visitor the other day and she's like the 75th percentile for height.
Yes, I think Ben might be on the same one, yeah.
Which is crazy because me and Ollie are really short. So I don't know how that happened, but yeah, she's too heavy for me.
Yeah. It's not this like relaxing, amazing experience where, you know, you're just swanning around, is it? It's like kind of sweaty because they're like so close to you as well.
Yeah, and it's such a,
you can't really do anything like I say, when he was small I could like make dinner and stuff while I was in it, whereas now he's so bulky I can't get my arms around him to actually do, you know, like if I'm trying to do the washing up or whatever, there's no way I could reach the sink at the same time. So it's a bit of a, it's not the sort of solution to all your problems that you imagine.
No, yeah, quite, but yeah. Nobody talks about that, do they, apart from us?
Apart from us, there we go. It's an expose, wraps the true story. but do you think that's going to change, you sort of go back to traveling and travel journalism and travel blogging more as she gets a bit older and maybe can go on more trips a bit more easily and things are a bit less kind of, you don't have to cart the world and, you know, and its horse with you exactly. Every time you go away.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope so. Yeah, I don't like to look too far ahead because I think once you've had one baby you realize your expectations versus reality are so stark that like the difference is so stark that you kind of don't want to
ever say like I'm going to do this 100% because as soon as you do that your baby will be like, oh, you thought you were going to do that, were you?
I've got a couple of press trips coming up in the next month, so I'll see how they go and I'll do as much as kind of our childcare will allow.
Yeah. what does that sort of look like for you? Is that family or nursery or a bit of everything?
I think whatever we can muster.
Yeah.
So she's been at full-time nursery since she was about 6 months old.
Yeah.
And not full-time, that's an absolute lie. So 2 days a week, and then occasionally we flex it. So this month has been pretty busy for me, or this past couple of months have been really busy for me. So we've had stints where she's been full-time.
Yeah.
But that, for me and for us as a family, it doesn't really work for us, her being in full-time nursery. So we also get a tiny bit of help from my mum and Ollie's mum as well. But we're moving further away, so we're kind of...
cutting off your options.
Yeah. I think it will still work out similar, but yeah, I think we'll have a bit less to rely on. But then I'm not going to be really... So I don't know if I've told you about this already, but when we moved down to Brighton and when the podcast is coming up to a natural hiatus in May,
yeah.
And then I'm just going to stop working over the summer.
Nice.
And then just be with Anais full time, basically.
Yeah.
Just so that I don't have the pressure of finding a new nursery.
Even if you applied for them now, you might not get something till September.
Exactly.
Like we were looking when he was about 3 months, we were looking when Ben was about 3 months old, and they were already saying, oh no, there's nothing till like next November.
My God.
And I was like, but like, so if I wanted to go to this nursery specifically, I would have needed to put him down before he was born. And that just baffled me completely, because you just don't like, and some people do that, but I can't imagine it, because I didn't know what having a baby was going to be like. So I didn't know what to look for in a nursery.
Yeah, absolutely.
At all. So yeah, so you know, it is quite stressful, especially on top of the stress of moving.
Yeah.
You don't want to then be like causing all other things. Do you think you'll pick it back up again after the summer, or just see how it goes?
I think basically we're just going to see how it goes and see how that works out for us as a family. I've created a stream of passive income that means that I'm in just such a fortunate position, and I was kind of reevaluating my job and why did I quit an office job? Well, it's because I wanted more freedom, but somehow I've created a life that basically looks like an office job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, that
yeah.
As humans we're kind of drawn to make our own boundaries, like, yeah, it's just
it's kind of I imagine there's a bit of guilt as well of being like, well, if I'm not working all the time, then why should I, you know,
exactly,
really doing it, I'm not really having my own business if I'm not doing this or whatever. But like you say, what was the point in trying to be flexible if you're not being flexible?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so yeah, we'll see how it goes, basically.
Yeah, amazing. She'll love that as well. I also kind of think that's an ideal scenario, because I'm about to go back to work in a couple of weeks, and I'm looking forward to it, because I really do love my job, and I'm only going back like 3 days a week to start with, so I think it's going to be absolutely fine. But I'm like, oh, he's just getting good now. Like, I really wanted maternity leave at the beginning when he was like 3 months old. I just found it so difficult, like being at home all the time, and like you just feel like you're constantly in like a weird cycle of like, okay, every hour and a half I have to like give him a bottle and change him, and then he has a nap, and then I have to give him a bottle and change, and like there was not a lot going on, whereas now he's actually quite fun. I think, oh, just as you're getting good, I have to go back to work. So like the idea that you could then come back around and be like, oh no, we're gonna have another little period of time together, is actually very appealing.
Ollie and I talk about this quite a lot, that paternity leave in that first 2 weeks is lovely, but do you know what, it'd be really nice if you had it when they were 4 months old and going through a sleep regression that's when you need it, isn't it?
Yeah, potentially even general is a bit of a ridiculous situation. 2 weeks is not enough for anybody, really.
Yeah,
to have like 2 weeks in like 2 weeks and then go back to work for a bit and then have another 2 weeks and then go back to work and have another two weeks, or just get the whole year off as well, you know.
Yeah,
do it Scandinavian style and just try and be equal about it.
Quite right, haven't they?
Yeah, they on that front, they definitely do. I was looking at, someone had started a thread on Twitter about their life in, I think it was Norway, and talking about how subsidised that they paid the most it was possible to pay for nursery, and it was like something ridiculous, like £50 a month, because they were all like subsidised and all lovely. And I know obviously it's not this utopia, but I do imagine it a bit like a utopia.
yeah, I do as well.
They've got great PR, even if
they really do.
Nothing else. So you have your fingers in very many pies, so you obviously do your blog, you do the journalism stuff, you do your podcast. how do you do it, Lucy? I was watching your video about bullet journaling. I think it was last week, because I'm thinking about I need to have a better system than just some scrawled to-do lists, really. But yeah, how do you kind of organize your time for now? Obviously you're going to be having the break, but to make sure you're sort of getting that all done.
Bullet journaling has pretty much changed my life. And the way I manage the kind of bigger picture of it is that I just work in seasons. So I found that to be really helpful. So this the first season, which we're coming to the end of now, was all about creating passive income.
Yeah.
So that I could have a break over the summer and when we move. And it was all about creative and passive income, but also about the podcast and smashing out that second season.
Yeah.
And finding sponsors and deciding what I do want to do with that. And so because I had those two goals in mind, I basically let anything else, I was so strict, I've let anything else that doesn't fit into those two goals and doesn't work towards them go. I've just let them go.
Yeah.
So I haven't really pitched for very many commissions. And I've been lucky that I've had a few come to me. And I've been very, very lazy about it, basically. But that was okay, because that wasn't part of my plan. And so I just went hard on the things that I knew were my plan and then let everything else go. Because I just think, like, it's impossible to do it all. And especially when you're a multi-hyphenated type, which so many of us are.
Yeah.
You just, it's impossible. And there's always someone telling you, you need to do this. You need to do Pinterest. You need to start Twitter chats, you need to, you know, start retargeting campaigns on Facebook, you need to do this, that and the other, and oh, there's an algorithm change and you can really drive traffic to your blog this way. And it, I mean, if you do it all, that's amazing, but you're never going to do it all well.
And also the people who are sort of saying that to you often have their own e-courses or coaching or whatever it is to push to you as well. So it's like, yes, if I really dedicated my time to Pinterest, then I probably would get those traffic from it. But I'd also, you know, the reason you're telling me that is partly because that's true, and also partly because you have a course that costs X number of £100 that will teach me how to do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's maybe, if it's not relevant to your goals, then it probably is, you know, you can kind of filter that out a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind me asking, when you say passive income, what sort of thing were you setting up?
Oh, yes.
So I know you've got your e-course, which I'm assuming is one of them, which is the like SEO stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that, some affiliate streams.
Yeah.
And also I've got two more courses that are going to come out later this year. So basically it was e-courses and affiliate marketing. But affiliate marketing in the way that I've never done it before, which is really targeted and authentic. And I hate to use that word. Everyone hates to use that word, but it wasn't pushing everything through my Amazon associates account. It was like I've got maybe 4 or 5 affiliate. It's really hard with affiliates because I never know how to word it. I've got affiliate partners, I suppose, and they align with my values, and I have used their products and genuinely love them and want to rave about them. And then I've just pushed those.
Yeah, if you were raving about them anyway, you might as well make a little bit of money off of it.
Exactly, yeah, totally. And so I just, I mean, it's so simple. It's just not, it's not really rocket science, but I didn't really, it didn't really click for so long. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. So I've got three streams. I'll have 4 streams of passive income by the end of the year. Yeah. So affiliate marketing and then the 3 courses.
Nice. You're living that internet dream. Who is it who does the podcast about passive income?
Passive smart income.
Yeah, that's like a big...
Pat Flynn.
Yes, that's it. It's like a big, like... I'm using the word cult. I don't mean it in like a negative way, but it definitely felt like for a while that was what everyone was talking about. Like, if you have a blog, you can make passive income. Like, that's going to be, you know, and then you can only work... You only have to work like 3 hours a week and you're going to be like...
You can be the
Tim Ferriss
dream.
Yeah. So you... I feel like, and part of like what you're saying with the, about the authentic, you know, even if you don't like that word, thing is your brand online feels like it's really built on sort of radical honesty and sharing your knowledge for free and those sorts of things. Is that something that you're that you made as like a conscious decision, or is that just something that just happens naturally for you?
Oh, that is the nicest thing I think anyone's ever said to me. I've got the biggest smile. I was like, oh, thanks so much. Yes, it is a very conscious decision.
Yeah.
But it hasn't always been. And it's come from really feeling like I wasn't myself online for such a long time, because I really bought into so much of the noise out there. I just felt that there were so many people telling me I had to do this and I had to do that, and you should do this and you should do that, and you'll only be a success if you do X, Y, Z. And I still remember the person who told me when I wanted to change my blog name, and I was I joined a course, a really rubbish course for travel blogging, and there was a super secret Facebook group to go with it, as so many things offer.
Yeah.
For like value added. And it was filled with really snarky American bloggers who have a chip on their shoulder. And it was a really horrible space to be in, actually. Mm. I remember sometimes, you know, when you lurk for a little bit of time in a Facebook group, and then you pluck courage one day to be like, oh, I wonder what you think about this. I'm thinking of changing my blog's name, or I'm thinking of doing this. And I'll always remember the girl who said to me, yeah, I'm sorry, but that is not a good name and you won't succeed with that. And I've met her in real life now, and it's so, so funny because
I bet she doesn't even remember.
She won't remember at all.
No,
yeah.
No.
and it all came from her, kind of, it was all from her crap, because she was changing her blog name from like her name to more of a different, she was rebranding basically.
Yeah, yeah.
She wanted me not to make the same mistake as her. But obviously that wasn't,
she didn't say it in a nice way. Yeah. Even if it was good advice, which it wasn't, it's one way to say it.
Yeah.
It's not to be like, oh, you're never going to succeed with that.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, I actually rebranded and I actually found that it wasn't a great experience.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a nice way to phrase that, but just to be like, oh, no, what are you doing?
Yeah. So I think because of that, and because I really took all that on board, and I felt like for so many years I couldn't be myself online, that now, I'm so passionate about sharing everything. I don't want to share everything in my life, but whenever I share something, it's honest. I will always, always, always be honest. And if I feel like there's something that is a bit icky and I haven't been honest, then I'll just go back and say, yeah, I was a bit of an idiot then. Yeah, because I don't want anyone else to feel like I did.
No, completely. And I think that really does show, because you have a really like engaged audience, you know, and on Instagram, you always get loads of comments, and like you have your lovely Facebook group for your podcast, which is a really lovely space.
Such a nice space.
I do think it really, like, you know, it pays off in a big way for you.
I hope so. Yeah. And I don't want anybody else to feel like I felt ever. And I recognize that sometimes I'm going to trip up, and I just sort of always want to be in a space where I can go back and feel safe to say I made a mistake, and not feel like my whole brand is going to collapse because of it.
No, and I think because of that level of honesty, I don't think it would it would be, you know, that's just what you do, as you say, oh, actually this time I wasn't quite on the money, and and everyone's very, and I think also because, like I said, we hang out on Instagram where everyone's quite nice anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, everyone's like, yeah, no, don't worry, we totally get you, it's fine. So we've sort of already touched on this a little bit in terms of your business, but kind of in a more broader sense. I believe, as I'm sure you do as well, you can have it all, but not all at once. So I just wondered if you could maybe share what things you're prioritising at the moment, and maybe the things that you're letting slip or that you're letting go of for now that might come back around for you, but that for now is just not the priority.
Yeah, I totally agree. So for me, for now, Instagram is not my priority. Although I love checking in to chat to my friends, and because it's a lovely place, it's not my priority in terms of creating and posting and things like that. And the blog actually isn't my priority at the moment. And I've let that slip over the past, but kind of consciously over the past month, and that's fine. Yeah, I think they're probably the things that I'm letting, the main thing. And actually those two things can take up a whole heap of time. So I've let those go a little bit. And then when the podcast comes to its season close, then I'll probably pick up my blog again, and I'll be dropping journalism pretty much over the summer. So yeah, so I think, but I totally agree with you that you can have it all, but not all at once. Pick your battle.
Someone else who I was interviewing, so if you've listened to all the episodes, you'll have already heard this saying, like, you can do anything, but you can't do everything, was the other way of putting it, which I also really liked. Like, yes, yeah. You can, like, totally throw yourself into something, but that doesn't mean you can do that with everything that you've kind of got going on.
Can you?
No. There's just not enough hours in the day, unfortunately. Yeah. And I think especially when you're a creative person and you're a mum and you have a business or any of those things, however many of them you do, there's not enough hours in the day for any of those things individually, let alone if you're trying to kind of mush them all together.
Yeah, massively. And I think there's a real trope online that, you know, glorifying the hustle.
Yeah.
And I hate it. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
Because it makes you feel like you're never working hard enough, and that, you know, you're going back to your full-time job in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And probably when you come home from that full-time job, you will not want to be hustling on a side hustle.
No.
You're probably going to be spending time with Ben, and you know, you're, I don't know, like, it's so stupid, isn't it?
No, it
like, is. Why should we feel that shame in, I just want to come home and watch telly.
Yeah.
After I finished my main hustle.
And I do think it's such a very specific internet thing as well. Like, I think if I spoke to a lot of my friends who definitely don't hang out as much online or sort of on Instagram and in the same way that we do, if I said to them about side hustles and the idea of coming home and doing another job, they'd be like, why would you do that? Why would you not just go home and just watch a box set and veg out on the sofa? Like, I think they probably would think I was completely crazy.
Yeah.
For even suggesting such a thing. So I do think it is like a weird, like, little kind of, you get into a bit of an internet bubble, don't you, where everyone sort of talks about the same things.
Oh, totally. Such an echo chamber, isn't it?
Yeah. And then what do you do? So obviously the ideal is everything's going well and you're prioritising the right things and you've got your childcare sorted and everything's wonderful. What do you do when that doesn't work? When things go wrong, when you're having sort of a day where, you know, kids are having a meltdown, you're having a meltdown, whatever it is. Do you have any sort of strategies for how you deal with that?
Oh my God, I'm the worst. I'm so terrible because I'm such a control freak. I'm a real classic Virgo control freak. I just want everything to go the way I planned it. But yeah, having a kid has definitely taught me that that's just not how life works. I think for my own sanity, I now, especially with childcare, and if she's poorly and can't go to nursery or, you know, whatever,
yeah,
I really just give in to it. Yeah. I found that that's the most helpful.
Don't fight the tide. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yes, exactly. Just go with the flow, which is a lot easier than it. Than I mean, I know it's, I'm oversimplifying it totally,
oh, no,
but
yeah,
you just, yeah. So that's kind of my strategy.
Yeah,
just go with it, and also a really practical strategy is get out the house, go to a coffee shop. If you are like Amy and I, and your kid probably won't just sit in a chair, put them in a buggy, get a takeaway coffee and a slice of cake, and that literally makes life so much better.
Nice, I like that. cake is the answer, I think.
Always.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think when I was first on maternity leave, and I was talking to my other mum friend, like my NCT friends, I just were like, is everyone else just eating cake all day? Is it just me? Like, no, we're doing is just like existing on cake.
Yes. Yeah,
and then finally, are there any other mums that you'd like to sort of give a shout out that you think are really inspiring, or that you really like the way that they run their businesses, or, you know, see what they're doing and you think, oh, they're just really great, you know, that other people should know about, really?
Yes, this is a brilliant question. And I'm really happy these people have popped into my head straight away, because, you know, sometimes you're like, oh my God, I can't think of anyone.
Yeah, suddenly I forgot the name of everybody I've ever known.
So Emma Ross, who's Mummalina, she is amazing. She's a total hippie, And she literally, if I said to her sleep training, she'd be like, I don't know what that is. You're ridiculous. But she's amazing and inspiring and honest. And I really love how she does stuff. She completely breaks the rules all the time. Yeah. But she's still really successful in my eyes. And her kids are so, so cute. Siobhan Watts, who is Bless the Weather. Yes,
I love her. She's great.
She's amazing. She's so wonderful. She's also a bit of a hippie. And her daughter, Rory, is just amazing. She's so, so sweet. Total little feminist.
She is. I love watching her little Instagram stories with her. And she's just like dancing around and singing and stuff. It's yeah. absolutely adorable.
So, so cute. And Nikki Batchelor, who online is Zero Waste Kent.
Yes.
She's amazing. She's so inspiring. So I know her in real life. I've known her for a really long time. We lived in the same part of Kent. And her, it's a really, actually, I was about to go into the whole story, but it's really boring and nobody needs to hear how we know each other. anyhow, she has started this amazing venture called Zero Waste Kent, and she shares really interesting things on her Instagram about, you know, resources that you can use if you're trying to reduce your waste or go plastic free. And she's really funny and just lovely. She's just a really nice girl. I love her.
Yes, yeah, I need that because that's one of my goals this year, is to be a bit more ethical in a variety of ways. One of which is definitely, I think we could do with my main thing is we just use a lot of kitchen towel, just loads of it, just all the time. I feel like with a baby especially, you're like just wiping things constantly. I'm like, there's got to be a better way than this.
It's really
like,
hard.
Like, I'm sure we like kill a tree like every day, which is not my not my goal in life at all. So yeah, I will definitely check her out because that sounds like something I need.
Yeah, and she does it in a really non-patronizing way. She's not preachy at all, so yeah. I would really recommend her.
Yeah, fab. Amazing. Well, thank you very much for sharing all of your wisdom. and as always, being super honest.
Always.
Would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me pretty much everywhere. I'm at Lucy Lucraft, or my blog, which is wonderloose.com. And my podcast is What She Said.
Amazing. And you should definitely check that out because it's a great podcast and there's loads of amazing guests. I've definitely, you mentioned Monica earlier, the travel hack. I've really enjoyed both her episodes especially.
They're brilliant, aren't they? Great.
Yes, she is really fab. Well, thanks very much. I'm sure we'll
thank you
soon. Thanks, cheers, bye.
And that's all, folks. You can find the show notes for this episode at amyliz.co.uk/podcast and sign up for our newsletter to stay up to date with all things Work Like a Mother. I'd love you to come and tell me what you thought of this episode on Twitter and Instagram at AmyLizBlog. And if you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it even more if you subscribed and left a review to help others find it. Next week, I'm chatting with Holly June Smith, who's a life coach, wedding celebrant and project manager, as well as a mum. We natter on about everything from how becoming a mum changes how you can work at your job to that oh-so-controversial topic of money, to what we're looking for in a good Christmas food catalogue. Talk to you soon.